There is an old saying that familiarity breeds contempt. The idea is the more comfortable you get with something after you've been around it for a long time, you become familiar with it, and therefore you don't treat it with the same respect, the same honor, the same dignity that you may have treated it in the first time you came in contact with either an object or a person. In relationships, that's true. As people spend more and more and more and more time together, especially in a marital relationship, there's a real possibility, even probability, that you start taking some liberties in your relationship. Carol and I have been married for over 32 years. She says that sometimes I make what she calls man noises. Now, I'm not going to go into, I'll let you figure out what man noises might be. Of course, I would never do that. Fact of the matter is, when we were in a dating relationship, I wouldn't have done that because we were only dating and I wanted to win her heart. And I wouldn't want to do anything that might be less than honorable, dignified, couth. Figure out the word that you want to use there. On the other hand, we were driving home this morning, and my wife was telling me that she has a dental appointment tomorrow. She has a tooth that's been giving her some problems, and she said once this tooth gets fixed, she's going shopping. She deserves it. Now, fortunately for me, it's only to the dollar store. You can spend 3/4 of an hour in the dollar store. She can spend 3/4 of an hour in the dollar store. I can spend about 30 seconds and I've gone through the whole thing. But she can spend 3/4 of an hour in the dollar store and come away only spending $10, which is a good thing. But she's going shopping. Now, when we were dating, she would never say to me, I'm taking your money and going shopping. It wouldn't happen. But she, because of the strength of our relationship, can just say, I'm going shopping, and that's all there is to it. Familiarity sometimes breaks down some things, and it can be a very good thing. I'm thankful for the security of our relationship, that we can do those things and not have to worry about consequences. But it can also be a very bad thing if it gets out of hand. Tonight we want to look at, let's see, not the book of Nebuchadnezzar tonight. The book of Song of Solomon, that's a good one. Chapter 5 and verses 2 on down through verse 8. The marriage has taken place, it has been consummated, and some time has transpired. I still think they're at this point in time very new in their relationship, but the dating phase of it is over. They've won each other. What we have here in verse 2 is believed by many to be a dream of the Shulamite woman. Verse 2 says, I sleep, but my heart waketh. The idea there is what's going on in the following verses is just going on in her head. She really is asleep, and it's just a dream. It very well may be, though, that these actually did take place. She was asleep one night, and we'll get into it in just a second here. What takes place is she's kind of in a in-between state. Maybe that's what it's talking about, but probably it's a dream. In her dream, she hears the voice of my beloved that knocketh. Apparently, Solomon was away on business, maybe some affair of state or whatever the case may be, and he was away and she was alone. She had gone to bed either for real or in her dream. She had closed the door to her chamber, and Solomon comes back and wants in, saying, open to me, my sister, my love, my dove, my undefiled, for my head is filled with dew and my locks with the drops of the night. We get here an indication of the time frame. Solomon, it was known, had very curly hair and probably very long hair. And like Gideon's fleece, when being out at night in the very early hours of the morning, it would get wet. So by the saying here that his head is filled with dew, it's in the late hours of the night, the wee hours of the morning. Whether he was out of town or maybe it was November and they were having a consistory meeting getting the budget together, it was running late. And he's coming in at the very early hours of the morning. Now, here's a little problem. Solomon wants to come home. You can't blame him for that. But his wife's gone to bed. He knows that if he comes, he's going to wake her up out of a sound night's sleep. Kind of uncaring, unthoughtful about him. If he was out that late, why didn't he just stay out, let her sleep the night through? But he wanted his bride. And he uses some terms of endearment, of affection here, and probably there is an overture of intimacy that's on his mind. But it's the wee hours of the morning. She's awakened out of a deep sleep. Verse 3, she speaks, "I have put off my coat. How shall I put it on? I have washed my feet. How shall I defile them?" You can hear her groaning in these verses. "You've got to be kidding," might be a good translation of the Hebrew here. "Do you realize it's 3 a.m. I have put off my coat." The word coat there is used of literally an undergarment. And to be quite delicate about this, she was in the buff. She had gone to bed, and that's normal in those days. In that area of the world, it was warm, and there was no central air conditioning or fans or anything to run in the night. And the only way to stay cool was the least amount of clothing. And in order for her to get up, she would have to get dressed. Not only that, she would have to walk across the room, and she's already washed her feet. She had bathed for the night. Everything was clean. One of the last things that would be done before getting into bed was you'd wash your feet, because you walked across dirt floors, dirt roads, and everything. And even though the rest of your body may have been clean, your feet would be dirty. And who'd want to go to bed with dirty feet? And she said, "If I get up to go answer the door, I'm going to have to wash my feet again. This is too much bother." Now remember, she's in a semi-conscious state here. She is sleeping, but her heart's awake. She's kind of in between. Solomon's knocking. She's, what's he doing out there? Who's wrong? Well, they both are. Well, Solomon was not deterred by her not getting up to answer the door. Verse 4, "My beloved put in his hand by the hole of the door." Apparently there was in the door a hole that you could reach through, and there would have been a bar going across the inside. And if you were able, you could lift up that bar and open the door for yourself. And that way she wouldn't have to get out of bed. She wouldn't have to get her feet dirty. He could come in, and oh well, that would solve the problem. But apparently he put his arm through there to no avail. He wasn't able to do it. "By this time, though, my bowels were moved for him." I was grumbling when I first awoke, but then I realized the situation. I realized he was gone, and I was willing to make the effort. Verse 5, "I rose up to open my beloved, and my hands dropped with myrrh, and my fingers with sweet-smelling myrrh upon the handles of the lock." Now, she got up. Apparently, she got dressed, and recognizing that it was her husband out there, she put some sweet-smelling stuff upon her. Her hands had the smell of perfume, and she went over to unlock the door, and the perfume was so great that it actually dripped down on the handles of the lock. Verse 6, "I opened to my beloved, but my beloved had withdrawn himself and was gone." Apparently, this took a little bit of time. She had to get dressed. She had to to get the sweet smelling stuff on her. So, and Solomon had reached in, couldn't do it himself. And when she didn't immediately come, he got frustrated and said, "Oh, what's the use?" Threw up his arms and went away. Now she comes to the door, she gets the door open, and he's gone. My soul failed when he spake. He invited me, but I didn't respond correctly. I sought him, but I could not find him. I looked all around, he wasn't to be found. He gave me no answer. I called and I called and I called. He was gone. She wasn't satisfied just to call after him. She actually went after him. Verse 7, she went out into the city. This would be Jerusalem. And the watchmen that went about the city found me. Now, understand that normally the night workers wouldn't be real familiar with the daytime people. It says here, they smote me, they wounded me. They probably assumed that if this was a woman out on the streets in the middle of the night, it was a woman of very little reputation. It wasn't the Shulamite, the bride of Solomon. Consequently, they were basically doing their job. Woman, you shouldn't be out here. Smack, go home, get in, you know, quit doing what you're doing and that type of thing. They were looking for righteousness. She's out looking for her husband. They wounded me. The keeper of the walls took my veil away from me. The veil would have been a wrap that would be around the shoulder. So she had gotten dressed. She actually had to put something on to be out there. This is an outer garment here. And they took that veil away from her. And just as Joseph, when Potiphar's wife grabbed the hold of his outer garment and he took off, she took off and left that behind. She was interested in finding her husband. To no avail. Sorry about the pun. I just realized that myself. No avail. Verse 8, I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, if you find my beloved, tell ye him that I am sick of love. Now, I have to be careful how you mention those last words. It's not, man, I'm sick of love. That was not the attitude. The attitude here, or the understanding of this, is, man, my heart is broken. I have such great desire for my husband, and I want him back with me. It makes me sick that he is not with me. I love him that much. Now, this was a dream. Whether it really happened in reality, I think, I don't know. But nonetheless, it very well could have happened. And it gives us some things to understand about a relationship and about love in a relationship and familiarity. And I'm going to give you four things, and I'm going to be done by 8 o'clock. Number one, never let the security of love pervert the sanctity of relationship. Never let the security of love pervert the sanctity of relationship. Who was wrong? Solomon? Yep. He should have been more thoughtful of his wife coming home at such a late hour. And why didn't he just let her rest? Why was he so insistent upon fulfilling his own quote-unquote needs? But the Shulamite, why didn't she wake up and said, "Hey, that's my husband"? Well, she must have been not a morning person, I guess. That's why it was that she didn't wake up that way. She didn't answer correctly immediately. And then, that rascal, he's at the door again. And you take some liberties. Don't do that. The old saying is, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Well, put that in spiritual terms. The sanctity of a relationship requires the expression of love. Number two, a poor reaction to sin is as equally wrong as a poor action of sin. A poor reaction to sin is as wrong as a poor action. Oftentimes in relationships, we try to figure out who the innocent party is. Do you know what? I've never found one. Even in the best of relationships, there's no innocent parties. You know why? for all have sinned, because all are sinners. And sometimes we say, well, if you wouldn't have done this, I wouldn't have responded in such and such a way. It doesn't make any difference if that person did that or not. Your response to a bad response is just as wrong as a bad action. They were both wrong here. Number three, a breakdown may cause division, but for there to be a make-up, there must be a union. Solomon got upset that his wife didn't come to the door. She got upset that he had come to the door. She wasn't willing to get up and get her feet dirty and get dressed. It was too much work. And he wasn't willing to stand there and wait for her. And consequently, she didn't come. He took off. And when she finally recognized that what was going on, she got up, it was too late. Well, she could have turned around, gone back to bed and said, he'll be back in the morning. Who knows that he would have been back in the morning? Don't take things for granted. A breakdown may cause division, but for there to be a make-up, there must be a union. Sometimes in marital relationships, you get to a place where you're having a disagreement and it's not being solved readily, and maybe it's time to put a little distance between you, like a half an hour. But I hear couples saying, we need to get some space between us so we can think these things through. No, you don't need space between you. You need God in the midst of you. What happens is you put some space in between you and your life, the space that you have. And you become content with being apart. And the more content you are, the farther apart you go. Last one. Love is perfect, but lovers aren't. Sinners will compound sin, but love will overcome it. The Shulamite ran after Solomon. She couldn't find him. She enlisted the help of the daughters of Jerusalem. And she said, if you guys find this, I want him to know one thing. I love him. Implied in that statement, I forgive him. And I need his forgiveness so that we can come back together again. Relationships just don't happen. They just don't maintain themselves. There's always going to be failures. Some big failures, some little failures, but they're always going to be failures. And whether there be big failures or little ones, they all need confession and they all need to be forgiven. And when that takes place, the fellowship is restored and the relationship thrives. Same way with the child of God and his Savior. Sometimes we take our relationship with the Lord kind of casually. I've been saved now for, I've been saved now for, my goodness, 26 years almost. And the Lord knows me pretty well. I know the Lord pretty well. And I don't talk to Him today, He's not going to mind. If I don't listen to Him today, He's not going to mind. If I don't obey Him today, He's not going to mind. Oh, you know what? It's just a little thing. Because I, after all, once saved, always saved. Right? True? Absolutely true. But what have I done? I've allowed the security of my relationship to pervert the sanctity of it. Don't let that happen. I don't like what the Lord's doing in my life today. I prayed for $1,000 this morning and God didn't deliver it to me, so therefore I'm not going to do what His will is today. Now, the Lord never makes a mistake, but the fact of the matter is sometimes we respond to what we think the Lord should be doing in a wrong way. That's kind of bad. Lord, I don't even want to bother with You today. Just give me some space. I'll come back. You know the shepherd in the story? We're in the parables, I guess, tonight. had 100 sheep and one of them wandered off, and the Lord said, just let him go. He'll come back. He left the 99 and searched for the one. And it's the love of God that overcomes all our sin, that when we confess it, He forgives us and cleanses us. Don't let the security of a relationship be perverted, that it perverts the sanctity of it. Let's be sick of love. Father, tonight, use these words to encourage us in our personal relationships with one another, whether it be in the marriage level, whether it be just on the friendship level, but even most of all on the relationship that we have individually and corporately with You. Lord, may we be found faithful tonight, because we know that You are always faithful. Lord, encourage us with these things. And Lord, maybe there's someone that we can share this with us in this week that's ahead of us. Lord, maybe we'll have the opportunity to share the gospel of Jesus Christ and start a new love relationship with someone else and You. Lord, in the week ahead, may we see Your hand of provision, Your hand of protection, Your hand of power, that we might come back here next week and sing praises to Your great name again for what You have done. We love You, Lord, tonight. Increase our love for You as we walk through these days, however few or many there may be, till Christ comes. In His name we pray. Amen. Have a good week.